Court ladies had clamoured over the jewels.
They draw the tiniest bits of blood. I only need a little. And when mixed with your blood, Bell blood, remarkable things happen.
My blood?
Yes. I have your leeches drained, and sometimes the one from your sisters at the tea houses, too.
I try to keep my disgust from showing on my face. Why?
Oh, don't let it bother you.
She pats my shoulder.
I discovered it long ago when I was a child, and my mother's favourite, Arabella, used to change my hair and eye colour in the playroom. She's still my favourite, Belle, too. Though you might be able to continue to win me over.
She bats her eyes at me.
I used to bite Arabella playfully, and tiny drops of her blood stained my little day dresses and pinafores. I'd have my nursemaid cut out pieces of the blood-stained fabric and save it. A strange keepsake, I know, but I was fascinated by what you all can do.
I step back from her. I search her face and eyes and wonder if she's serious. She beams at me. Pride oozes out of every corner of her. Does she want me to be honoured that she's fascinated by bells?
That's when I made the discovery. That's when I began to understand the power of it. If Arabella's blood touched my skin, it would restore the colour momentarily. Imagine! I thought bells had more power than queens. I wanted to be like that.
She runs her fingers over the jewellery, tracing her fingertip across the tiny places where needles poke out and the hidden chambers tucked inside the crested jewels.
I sucked the fabric and sometimes stole Arabella's leeches to eat. I thought if I ingested the blood, I'd become like you. Like Arabella. Like the bells I saw in the tea houses.
But it didn't work.
It just made me sick.
Discomfort settles into my stomach. She returns to her wall.
As I got older, my sister, cousins and friends became prettier and prettier than me. My mother wouldn't let me do deep body work. She started enacting laws and shying away from radical changes. I felt ordinary, forgotten, plain. My sister made it seem so easy to be beautiful. The colours she chose and her subtle changes made her look extraordinary, more lovely after each appointment with Arabella. I needed people to pay attention to me like that. I needed to be better than everyone. I needed to have the same style and beauty instincts.
She leans close to one of the morphing portraits.
Look!
She pulls me forward.
Lady Christiana just had her hair colour changed from brown to a plum purple. Hideous colour. And at this hour, I wonder which tea house she's patronising.
We watch the image change. The nose transforms from a slender-tipped point to more of a cute button. Her cheekbones lift higher and her jawline smooths out. Her skin darkens from ivory to honey brown. It's like watching a teletrope reel of minute-by-minute changes.
"Your powerful arcana connect them to my wall," she says. "It's more immediate with yours than your sister's, or even Arabella's. Even with only a few drops of their blood mixed with yours, I can see what they do."
I don't understand, and I don't know if I want to.
I change the jewellery every week to always have a fresh supply of their blood, and for some reason it even evades my scientists. Your blood allows me to watch them.
I don't know what to say.
Be excited. You are strong.
She clasps my wrist.
And you will be the one to help me achieve my goals, finally. I want to be the most gorgeous woman in all of Orléans and the world.
But you are already stunning.
You lie so easily. It makes me wonder what else you aren't telling me.
The pitch of her voice sends a skitter of nerves through me. Her eyes burn into mine.
I'm not I know that I'm not the most beautiful, I come here twice a day, and I'm reminded when I see pictures of my sister in the royal halls, when I see the looks your sisters create, when I see my mother. I know I'm average at best. I wasn't blessed by the goddess of beauty with a superior natural template. I don't have a good base to work with. She reminds me of myself, wanting to be the best, researching and plotting and planning to make sure I am ahead of everyone. But how can you tell who is more beautiful? They all look different, I ask. Do you understand what I want? She raises her voice. I start to sweat. She steps closer to me. Her heavy breaths are coming out in pants. You want to be the best, I say. And somehow it's too familiar, like I'm talking about myself. I might do the same thing if I was preparing to be queen. The dark realization sinks down inside me. Sophia grins.
I knew you'd understand.
She takes my hand and kisses it.
We must become friends, best friends. After all, I wanted you, always, from the first time I saw you in your Beauté Carnaval carriage.
She heads toward the door.
You will do whatever it takes to help me, right?
Yes, Your Highness, I say as I curtsy. But I don't know what it will cost me. 28. Ivy waits for me in the main salon the next morning, and rushes to me as soon as I step into the room. I need to speak with you. Her nervous energy radiates out like the rays of a too strong sun. And I have a question for you. Why didn't Arabella return home? I ask before she can lecture me about whatever it is. Ivy bristles. How do you know about her? Is she one of your sisters? I say. I saw her. No, she's from the generation before me. She's the Queen's favourite belle. She kept her at court to work with Princess Charlotte. She's been at court that long. Do Barry allowed it? The Queen gets what the Queen wants, Ivy says. Servants push in breakfast carts overflowing with hard-boiled eggs, grilled meat and fruit tarts, pastries, fried bacon and sweet toast, but Ivy shoos them out, then races to Elizabeth's office door. She knocks three times and presses her ear against the wall. The door doesn't swing open. Good. She's gone. Ivy hovers over me. What happened last night? She asks. With Sophia. How did you know about that? I pluck a cheese tart and plate from the cart and sit on a chaise. I'm supposed to know all things when it comes to you and your transition to court. Like a spy? I tease, trying to make her smile and relax a little. Like an older sister. She sweeps the plate from my hands and sets it on the table. I need you to focus and tell me exactly what happened. She furiously knits her lace-gloved hands. Sophia brought me to her workshop. I saw her... the portraits. She flattens her hands on her waist sash as if she's nursing a stomachache. It's starting again. What is? I reach for my plate. She slams it to the table. I jump. I need you to focus right now. Her issues, her obsessions. I thought she'd gotten better. I thought I'd helped her, she says. You talk about her as if she's ill. She is unhinged. A bit, yes. She's pressured, anxious. She wants to be the most beautiful, I say. I think I can help her too. Ivy freezes. Her stare burns. I thought that too, foolishly. You can't tell. You don't sense it. Sense what? She squeezes down next to me on the chaise, so close I catch a scent of the lavender cream she wears. I'm not supposed to poison your thoughts. Dubarry and the beauty minister gave me strict instructions not to tell you things. Her voice quivers. She pauses as doors open and shut in other parts of the Bell apartments. Tell me what? My pulse flutters. Ivy glances over her shoulder. Breakfast attendants fill teapots with piping hot water and set down carafes of snowmelon juice. Wait, she whispers to me. Leave us, please, she tells them. I'll ring the bell when you can return. They scurry out.
Sophia has dark impulses. She is as still as a stone. When I was named the favourite, she had just turned 13. One of the Queen's ladies of honour gave her a teacup crocodile. It was a tiny little thing named Pascal, with sharp teeth and a long tail that dragged behind him like a train of pearls. But Sophia had had her heart set on a teacup dragon. Those had become increasingly rare a few years earlier. Royal breeders couldn't get one to survive beyond a few hours after hatching. Ivy takes a deep breath. Sophia forced me to do beauty work on Pascal.
We worked on our teacup dogs and the stray teacup cats at home, I remind her.
Yes, but we only changed the colour of their fur for Arcana practice. She eyes the front salon doors. Sophia made me break his back. Her voice cracks, and refashion the bones into a pair of wings. My hand goes to my mouth. I had to snap his neck and stretch it out so he looked more like a dragon than a crocodile. Then she tried to make him fly. I raise my hands. I don't want to hear any more. She dropped him off her balcony. She killed him. Ivy, I told you, I don't want to know. I leap up from the chaise. You have to know. She was just a child. This was only a few years ago. What if those impulses have grown with her rather than diminished? I don't want to talk about this any more. I storm out of the main salon. Camille! Ivy calls out. Camille! Inside my bedroom, I slam the door, then step onto my terrace. A cool breeze carries leaves across the floor like a prism of windy season makeup colours. Marigold, chestnut, scarlet, apricot. I wish the breeze could sweep away what Ivy just told me. Whisk it off to some other place. A bright leaf gets caught on the abacus on my desk. I rescue it and rub it between my fingers. I smell it and think of Maman. When the warm months turned windy, she would take me around the edges of the forest that surrounded Maison Rouge de la Butte, and we'd hunt for leaves, collecting only the most beautiful, the brightest, still rich with colour. Back in our room, she'd show me how to use them to make natural-looking pigments and mix hair shades, and we'd press them between tomes of fairy tales to keep them as records of our adventures. I open her bell book. A frayed scandal sheet called Madame Selena's Secrets is tucked between two pages. The headline, Lady Simone de Bertrand of House Eugene dies while having her skin colour restored by the favourite. What? Maman's frantic handwriting accompanies it. Date, day 53 at court. She wanted the whitest skin in the whole kingdom, pure as fresh milk and a newborn daisy, she kept saying. Her attendant held a mirror above her body the entire session. Oh, it pressed the chalk-white colour down into her skin, and it would sour, mixing with stubborn shades of radiant grey. She would sit up, slap me, and make me do it again. I got so angry. I couldn't hold on to the picture of her in my mind. The arcana didn't work properly. She kept slapping me harder and harder, and threatened to use a belt if I couldn't deliver the right colour. I felt a pinch inside me, and couldn't stop myself from imagining her flesh covered in wrinkles, her heart slowing. When I opened my eyes again, her eyes were bulging and her mouth was slack. Her heart had stopped. I didn't understand what had happened at first, but then I realized. It was me. I'd done this. The Minister of Justice ruled the case accidental. Her private doctor confirmed she'd had health challenges before having beauty work done. I suck in a sharp breath. Maman killed a client. The arcana betrayed her. How could she have kept this a secret? Could the same thing happen to me? I slam the book shut and tuck it back into its hiding place in my beauty cas. Two post balloons zip inside, trailed by more leaves. The first, a crimson one, burning bright with Maison Rouge de la Butte's house emblem. The second, a silvery white one covered with a twinkling collage from the glass tea house. I tie their ribbons to the balloon hook on my desk. I cut open the one from home first. I pluck out the parchment.
Dear Camille, I haven't heard from Adel. I asked Dubarry, but she just keeps saying everything is fine to focus on my own work. Is everything all right? What have you heard? The babies have grown even more. Dubarry had us celebrate their 6th birthday 2 nights ago. I don't quite understand how it all works. Did we grow this fast too? The nurses hum them songs and call them rose babies. I've included a drawing of the one who looks like you. She could be your twin, dimple and all. I keep accidentally calling her Camille, but she doesn't mind. She wants to be just like you when she comes to court. Her name is Belladonna. We call her Donna. Love, Valerie.
I unfold the 2nd page and see a portrait of a smaller version of myself. Bright eyes, warm brown skin, dimple in the left cheek, curly hair with a pile of frizz. Why would the goddess of beauty create another Belle who looked like me? Dubarry gave us pamphlets about our births. She told us beauty had sent each one of us to our mothers, that we'd fallen from the skies like shooting stars, that she'd hand-picked all of our features, that we were all flushed and warm with blessed blood. What isn't Dubarry telling us? And what about the Belle at the chrysanthemum tea-house with the deformed face? Did beauty send her, too? I open the 2nd post-balloon. From Hannah. Camille, I have been staying up late at night trying to find whoever keeps crying. My madam, Juliette Bendon, says it's just overly drunk courtiers at her late-night parties, but I don't believe her. I think there are other women here, but I can never search for long. I'm so tired these days. I don't have a moment's rest. I haven't heard from Adel, but I saw the headline too. She won't answer my post-balloons. Hannah. I pace the room. Where are you, Adel? Why haven't you written back? Amber might be right. Maybe she did escape. But if so, how is she surviving? Where did she go? How is the tea house continuing to operate without raising alarm?
Lady Camellia,
Bree interrupts my thoughts. I tuck the letters away and join her in the main salon. What is it?
Come have a look.
She waves me to the Belle apartment doors.
Remy is with his sisters.
We peek through a space in the door. Remy holds the hand of a little girl a quarter of his size, while 2 others fuss over him. The little one's hair is a dark cloud of coils and glitter, complete with metallic threads reminiscent of lightning streaks. They all share his rich midnight colouring, and standing together they look like a bouquet of black calla lilies.
"What's she like?"
the little one asks.
"You promised to tell me everything about the favourites, and you've only sent 2 post-balloons. How can you fit everything into only 2 letters?"
He smiles down at her with an easy demeanour that I've never seen.
"You haven't told us anything," the tallest one says.
The silver colour of her gown makes her skin glow and hugs her curves like silk around an hourglass.
"Even Maman's been asking."
"She's nice," he says. His compliment warms me.
"That's it,"
the 3rd one replies with a stamp of her foot. She shoves his shoulder and pouts, her lips a brilliant shade of coral.
"She's a little stubborn."
I smile.
"Can be a bit impulsive or reckless," he adds.
I scoff. Bree chuckles.
"That's why I like her," the tallest one says. "She does what she wants, or that's what it seems like."
"I bet you just love that, Remy,"
the 3rd one replies. "She's probably not listening to you at all." They all laugh together, their voices at a similar pitch. A set of warm-toned pavilion bells. A family. It makes me miss my sisters.
"Have you rescued her? Protected her from evil?"
the little one asks, like this is all some fairy tale adventure.
"More like escorted her places and followed her around," he says, picking the girl up. "Mirabel, you are missing nothing, I promise you."
He presses his forehead to hers and they rub their noses together.
"I'm missing everything."
Her bottom lip quivers and tears well up in her eyes.
"Shall we sing our song?" he says.
"Yes,"
she whimpers. He hums, the deep baritone of his voice rippling through the hallway, resonating inside me.
She sings a little tune about a yellow frog and its lily pad and pond. He kisses her cheeks and she bursts into laughter. It makes me wonder about his life before the palace. It makes me wonder how he might be if he wasn't my guard.
"Can we meet her?" the tall one asks. "No," he says with a frown, and now I recognize him again.
"But please," little Mirabelle begs.
"Soldiers of the Minister of War aren't supposed to use their positions to seek special treatment or favor. It's against the code."
"Everything is about rules with you," the middle one says.
"Always has been," the tallest one adds.
"It wouldn't be appropriate," he says. "You three shouldn't even be up here, and I've indulged you already too long."
"We were just passing through," the tallest one says.
"No one just passes through the residential parts of the palace."
"We were invited to court to see the princess's wedding dress," Mirabelle says. "I saw the invitation."
He pinches her cheeks.
"I don't doubt you, but I suppose your sisters invited themselves up here."
"Why would you..."
the middle one starts to say.
"I admit we did,"
the tallest one says.
"We just missed you."
"That's a lie," he says.
"Fine. We just wanted to know more about her. The papers say she's stronger than the other favourite, and the Trianon Tribune says she might have a fourth arcana."
I glance at Bree and mouth, "Really?" She nods with a smile on her lips.
"You know how I feel about tattlers, scandal sheets and newspapers. And you can't just use my name to come up here. It's not..."
"Appropriate," the three of them say in unison.
Bree and I exchange a mischievous grin. I smooth the front of my dress and make sure all the curls in my bell bun are neatly in place. I yank open the door. The girls gasp.
"Remy!"
I call out as if annoyed. He steps forward at attention.
"Oh, there you are. I was looking for you."
Mirabelle has her hand cupped over her gaping mouth. The other two are statues frozen in place.
"Hello,"
I say. "Did I interrupt?"
"No, Lady Camellia, they were just leaving," Remy says.
"Not without a proper introduction. Remy, where are your manners?" I say, loving the twist of horror present on his face. "Who are these beautiful girls?"
"My sister, Adelise,"
the tall one curtsies.
"Odette,"
the middle girl bows.
"And Mirabelle."
The little one barrels into me, wrapping her pudgy arms around my waist. Remy reaches for her. I sweep her out of his reach and kiss her.
"It's fine."
I talk to them about court and their home in the Spice Isles and how insufferable Remy can be. Their eyes grow wide and smiles spread across their faces. His mouth finally softens again. They wave goodbye and disappear down the long staircase. I watch Remy watching them and think, maybe he isn't so terrible.
29. In the receiving hall, the Queen's court is called together for a presentation of Sophia's possible wedding looks. Chrysanthemums and bell roses adorn the welcoming foyer, creating garlands around marble pillars. The din of gossiping voices fills the room. I sit with the beauty and fashion ministers in chairs near the throne platform. Remy stands behind me. The Queen raises her scepter. Imperial guards labour to bring out massive gold-framed portraits of the princess, the size of wall tapestries. The frames are numbered and labelled, Princess Sophia's wedding looks. In each one, Sophia is painted with a different look. Hair textures range from loose curls to needle straight to corkscrew curls to waves to zigzag coils, and the styles showcase each new hair tower trend. A smiling version of her face is presented in an array of skin tones. Her dresses vary, from gold brocade with cream lace ruffles, to a pink bustle gown with silk rosebuds and beige lace, to a dark peacock blue-coloured silk embroidered with a sequin trim, to an all-white A-line covered in seed pearls. Sophia squirms on her throne. The Queen stands.
"My wise and loyal court, please join me in helping to decide the princess's wedding look. Besides becoming a wife, my daughter will also step into her forever look, as tradition demands of the royal family.
The crowd applauds.
But first I want to hear from the favourite. Camellia, please join me, she says.
I jump at the sound of my name. The queen leaves her throne. Her fur robe trails her as she points at the portraits. I proudly stand and walk over to join her.
These were put together by my cabinet, but you and your sisters hold the secrets to the art of beauty. I want to know what you think.
Yes, Your Majesty, I say.
What look would you give my daughter? Which would you choose?
My hands knit in front of me. The questions she asked me at Sophia's birthday banquet compete with her latest challenge. Can you do this? Can you be who I need you to be? I comb over the portraits. I want to show her that I belong here. The sound of whispers and the whoosh of newsy post balloons echo. My brain struggles to puzzle out which one would be best. In our lessons, Du Barry gave us beauty templates to work with, skin and hair colours that complement each other, the most balanced shades and pigments, symmetrical facial structures, dresses for specific body types, bell makeup colour for every palette. But I never wanted to use them, always preferring to create my own looks from scratch. My mind is a well of doubt. I glance up at Sophia. Our eyes meet. Deep green eyes stare into mine. Her hair falls into her lap, swirling into a pile of ringlets. Her tiny teacup monkey plays hide-and-seek within the strands. I wonder if she wants to pick her own look. I wonder if she has an opinion or was given a choice. Her dress begins to rustle. The crowd snickers. Out pops a tiny teacup elephant, its trunk no longer than half a peppermint stick. The monkey jumps from her lap and chases the elephant around the throne. Sophia leaps forward and scoops both of her teacup pets into her arms, giving them a flurry of kisses. The queen waves her hand at one of the imperial guards. He wrenches the creatures from Sophia's hands. The animals cry out.
"So, Sage," she says, "it's all right, it's just for now."
"My daughter has an unnatural fondness for animals," the queen says.
The crowd laughs. The distraction buys me some time to think. The queen turns her attention back to me.
"Now, shall we begin?"
She walks back to her throne. I circle the pictures. All eyes are on me. I chew the inside of my cheek. Du Barry would want me to do something simple. Pick a portrait, make a few suggestions. The beauty minister would say to discuss what I like about each one. The fashion minister would want me to highlight which dresses best match each particular look. I snuff out their voices like candles. I want the queen to see what I can do, to see that I can be the person she needs, to know that I can help her daughter. Sophia has patterns, always returning to blonde hair, no matter if her skin is a warm hazelnut or paper white or a deep inky black, or if her hair texture is a frizzy cloud or deeply wavy or shaved to the scalp. I run my fingers over the portraits, feeling the lumpy paint beneath my fingertips. These pre-approved looks aren't enough. I can't tell what she would look like from the back or whether her profile would suit. I turn to the queen. "Your Majesty, would you indulge me if I experimented a bit?" Her mouth is a straight line.
"As you wish."
I close my eyes. The room dissolves around me. The women and their flapping fans and raspy whispers, the queen's strong gaze, Sophia's frustrated sighs, the noise of the newsies' pens, the gentle flutter of post balloons and lanterns, the roiling boil of anticipation. I think about what I'd do if Du Barry had assigned us this task. I return home to the lesson rooms. I'm with Maman at a work table, her hands on my shoulders, her laugh ringing in my ears, her voice drifting over me.
"You know what to do. Make beauty mean something."
There are no grades, there is no commentary from Du Barry, There is no competition from my sisters. Just me and the Arcana. I can see the princess in my head. My body warms. Beads of sweat dot my neck. My heart pounds. My blood races through me. The Arcana awaken. I fix my gaze on the portraits. I pull the paint from the canvases. It circles around me like a colourful tornado. The court erupts in oohs and ahs. I push myself further. I want to show them that I am unforgettable. So unforgettable that the Queen realizes she should have chosen me first, that she won't ever let me go. I rip the canvases into shreds, breaking them into parts, cotton, linen, glue, and aged hemp. They add to the windstorm. I use the Age Arcana to smooth the hemp, bringing life and moisture back to the material. Then form it into legs, arms, a torso, and a head, like I'm a little girl playing with papier-mâché. I give her my sister Valerie's gorgeous, voluptuous shape. I use the Aura Arcana to extract the paint and coat the new body-shaped canvas, colouring it the same shade as the sand that lines the royal beach. I make her eyes the colour of a stormy grey sky to honour the people of Orléans. But add tiny golden sunflowers around the middles to mirror the royal chrysanthemum. I tug the silk threads from a nearby tapestry. They crawl along the floor like golden and white snakes. I fashion them into a blonde halo of tight curls and create a cream wedding dress. The final product stands like a life-size doll beside me. Women cover their mouths with gloved hands or lace fans, and the men's eyes bulge. Many stand motionless. No one speaks. My legs threaten to give out. My eyelids droop. I inch down to a bow, waiting for the Queen's reaction and to hide my utter exhaustion. I try to stop panting. Sophia claps furiously and races down the throne platform. She pulls me up to my feet, hugs me tightly, and whispers, "I knew you were the best." She links her hand in mine. "Together we're going to be more powerful than any queen and favourite." The Queen starts to clap, followed by the rest of the court. Sophia releases me. I bow again, but struggle to push up from the floor. Remy's hands find their way around my waist, lifting me like a baby that's fallen from a chair. The words, "thank you," catch in my throat. The Queen leaves her throne. She descends the stairs and admires the statue I've created. "Camellia, very lovely," the Queen says, giving me an appraising look. My heart races. Another wave of exhaustion hits me. "I've never seen anything like it." The court gives me a standing ovation.
"It's more than lovely, Mother," Sophia says. "It's spectacular."
The princess turns me away from the Queen. She hugs me again and whispers close to my ear.
"I made this happen, you know. I got you back here, and now you've proven I was right all along."
Sweat drips down my back. "What do you mean?" I stutter out. She flashes me a smile, and the world spins. Chairs stretch into colourful putty. Laughter crescendos into peaks, and the floor beneath my feet wobbles like the land is melting out from under me. 30. After Sophia's wedding dress presentation, the newsies go wild with their headlines.
"New favourite topples Queen's concerns with her skill."
"Princess Sophia ecstatic about the new favourite."
"Sophia's wedding look to be the most coveted in the kingdom."
"Camellia is rumoured to be the most powerful favourite that ever existed."
"The Bell's Arcana may be able to do more than the Guardians have reported."
My days settle into an ebb and flow like the crystal blue waters of La Mer de Roire, crashing onto the beach below the Bell apartments. I become stronger, pacing myself and using the sans-soux to keep from fainting. Sophia doesn't invite me to her workshop again. The morning appointment ledger is usually only filled with lady courtiers from all over Orléans. but today it shows August Fabry, House Rouen, son of Minister of the Seas, 9 a.m. Duchess Midori Babineau, House Helly, 10 a.m. Countess Anzu Charon, House of Bowyers, Favoured Bowmaker, 11 a.m. Lady Daramu Arkambo, House of Spice, 11:30 a.m. I run my finger across August's name, believing Elizabeth's handwriting might disappear. I count the letters in August. 7. A number loved by the god of the sea. Did his parents do that on purpose? I can feel his sly smile, almost as if he's in the room with me. A tiny flutter flits in my chest. Bree opens my bedroom door.
Treatment salon 4 is ready.
I gaze down at my teal work dress and apron. Bring me a day dress instead, the lavender one. No, the buttercup yellow with the ruffled sleeves.
But it's against please,
Bree, I add a smile. She leaves for the wardrobe room. I pace in front of my desk. I think about sending my sisters post-balloons. I think about telling them more about August. I think about asking for their advice. Is there anything wrong with being nice to him? Is there anything wrong with being friendly? Adel's face flashes in my mind. She would tell me to flirt and let myself laugh.
Answer a post-balloon, Adel.
My worry for her piles on top of itself. She has to be at the fire tea house still. There would be more headlines if she wasn't. Maybe DuBarry sent one of our older sisters back there. But DuBarry wouldn't do that. When a bell leaves court, she is to return home and remain there. Well, what about the bell from the chrysanthemum tea house? I lift my pen from its inkpot, but my hands feel too light to hold anything. I shake them out. Bree returns with the day dress.
Is everything all right?
Yes, fine. I change, then drape my mirror around my neck. Its cold presses against my too hot skin.
Your client is in the salon with Ivy.
Bree opens the bedroom doors. He's here already?
Yes, my lady. It's almost time to begin his treatment.
I walk down the hall. I try not to break into a run. I pass the wall of favourites and stop in front of Maman's portrait before entering the main salon. Her eyes twinkle. I hear a memory of her voice.
Don't be silly about meeting boys and girls at court. Keep focus on your arcana, your strength, and your sisters. Camellia?
Bree touches my shoulder. I startle.
He's waiting, she says.
I take a deep breath before stepping through the entryway. I let it out slowly like the air in a post-balloon. August stands beside the fireplace, his eyes fixed on the tapestry above it. Elizabeth fires questions at him, but he doesn't answer. Attendants buzz in and out of the room, and servants carry supplies and push golden carts. Ivy sits in a nearby chair. Bree announces me. August whips round with a smile.
Have a great session, Elizabeth says, trying to attract his attention.
He glances around her. She pouts, then retreats into her office, closing the door behind her. I fight with my lips, trying to press them into a serious and professional frown, rather than the grin that threatens to overtake them.
Hello, Mr. Fabry.
So formal now.
Are we not friends? He steps forward.
Friends,
I say with a laugh, then swallow it. Standing with him feels like we're exchanging a secret in front of everyone. Ivy clears her throat.
Have you had tea? I ask.
Yes, and it's awful. He lifts off a teapot lid. Hot vapours drift up like smoke. Couldn't you slip honey or sugar into it to make it more pleasant?
That dulls the bell-rose effect, unfortunately, I say.
Or fortunately, if you like pain.
Who enjoys pain? He starts to push his finger into the teapot, as if he's going to plunge it into the hot liquid.
No, don't.
I reach for his hand.
Are you worried about me? He asks.
I pull back. If you want to burn yourself, go ahead. He does, and I try not to gasp.
I don't mind it. Sometimes it reminds me that I'm awake.
He flashes the now red finger at me. You are odd, I say.
The good kind or the bad kind?
I don't know yet. Ivy taps her hourglass.
It's time, she whispers to me.
Are you ready to begin, Mr. Fabry?
Only if you stop calling me that. I'm not my father, he says with a smile.
Are you ready, August?
Yes, now that you've asked me nicely.
He winks before his attendant leads him to the bathing chambers. I return to the hall that leads to the treatment salon. Ivy rushes behind me.
Camellia, she grabs my arm. How do you know him?
We've met before, I say.
When?
Her voice turns serious.
Where?
I'm overwhelmed with the need to lie and withhold the details of how I know August, like hiding a rare and expensive gem in a secret pocket.
Just around?
At court?
You aren't supposed to be friendly with young men.
What about old ones?
I feel her scowl beneath her veil.
You need to be careful.
I know. I am.
It is forbidden. She clicks her teeth. And besides, he is one of Sophia's suitors.
I know.
The passion between two people can ruin the arcana, poison the blood with toxins.
I touch her shoulder. I'll be sure to use more leeches. On the hour.
Camellia!
I'm only teasing. I was just being nice to him.
Too nice, she warns.
I'll work on being mean.
I leave her standing there and walk to treatment salon 4. Roses sprout out of jeweled vases. Beauty lanterns drift overhead like small suns, shining perfect beams of light across the treatment bed. August steps from behind an ivory screen in a silk robe. I blush at the sight of him.
You sure know how to take your time, he says. Are you trying to run off my bill?
I'm certain you can be patient, I say, just before Ivy enters the room behind me like a dark cloud. I move a cart of bay powder bundles just to pretend to have something to do. His eyes are on me. It sends a warm flush across my skin.
I did a lot to get onto your schedule. After your latest feat at court, my attendant said you were booked for 10 months straight.
What did you have to do?
I find his gaze. Kiss 3 different women, plus send them flowers and love-themed post balloons.
The expensive kind, from Marchand's shop. Can't you get into trouble for that? You're one of Princess Sophia's suitors.
I swore them to secrecy. I could be the future king, and they think all kings need mistresses. It's made me more popular.
Disgusting.
I try not to disappoint.
Aren't you humble? I laugh, then turn my back to him. I light tiny tea candles beneath a chafing dish to start melting a skin colour pastille.
I went to a lot of trouble to get here.
It sounds exhausting.
It was back-breaking work.
I stifle a laugh. Ivy groans.
What services would you like? I ask. Make me look as handsome as I already am.
Who said you were handsome?
The women I had to kiss in order to take their appointments. Also, I was featured in last season's male beauty scope.
Good for you.
Are you not amused?
Ivy clears her throat again. August turns to her.
Are you sick, miss? Because I cannot afford to catch a cold. No, sir, I'm not.
Well then, perhaps you should leave us anyway.
I'm feeling a bit shy with all these people in the room, he says.
I feel Ivy stares through her veil, no doubt waiting for me to ask her to stay. I press my lips together until she rises from her seat.
If that's what you wish, Ivy says.
It is, he replies. She curtsies and saunters out. The air in the room thickens like pudding now that she's gone.
You lied. You aren't shy, I say. Not in the least, he says. I just wanted to be alone with you. Or as alone as is possible, within the rules.
My cheeks warm. I glance away. So what services do you want?
I hate that I even have to do this.
I frown. Oh, I didn't mean it like that. It's just... I dislike...
He waves his hand around. The fact that I need to be altered. The ship had to dock every month for us to have this maintenance done. It always felt so ridiculous, unnecessary.
I don't know what to say to him. I don't know how to process his distaste. I thought everyone loved changing the way they looked. I thought they all coveted it.
Then let yourself be grey. Then no one would want to look at me.
You'd be rid of all of this. I wave my arms around.
But now I think I'll like these treatments more because I can have them done with you.
He stares at me. I fiddle with metal instruments on a nearby cart. I might not be available next time.
I'll do what it takes. I'll find a way.
Why would you go to this trouble?
I don't know, really, he says. I went to the Chrysanthemum Tea House 2 days ago and didn't like...
You saw my sister? My heart skips.
I did.
How is she?
A little grumpy. She wasn't amused by my charm.
I don't think many people are.
His mouth drops open. Ouch.
How did she seem?
After I tried to flirt with her, lighten the mood, she refused to speak to me. I imagine Auguste on Amber's treatment table and almost laugh. His antics definitely would have gotten under her skin.
We should begin, I say.
Yes.
He starts to disrobe and servants rush forward to help. I whip around.
Are you shy? He asks.
No, but it is not customary for me to see you nude. You should have waited until I left the room.
I don't care much for customs.
The bed groans as he climbs onto it.
Plus, I'm not naked. Not to worry, you don't have to be afraid.
How many times do I have to tell you I'm not afraid?
1,000.
You're harmless.
I'm quite dangerous, actually.
He playfully grazes my arm. The touch of his fingers sends a warm ripple through me. I slip out of his grasp. Do you behave like this with all women?
No, just you.
I find that hard to believe.
You don't trust me, he asks.
I don't know you.
What do you want to know?
Nothing. Everything. Bree lifts one of the hourglasses on the table, showing me I only have a few more minutes left in his session. It's almost time for my next client.
Well, you've done an awful lot of talking, he says, so I should get more time. You haven't given me my spintria's worth.
You're the one who's been asking questions, and you haven't told me what you want.
You choose. I, at least, trust you.
He closes his eyes. I dust his face with bay powder and put some up his nose to make him sneeze. I only have time for a quick treatment. I paint tiny freckles across the bridge of his nose and cheekbones like caramel raindrops. The arcana wake up inside me. I brush my fingers over his face. His skin is soft and warm, his breath hot on my hands. His pale white face appears in my mind. I add the freckles one by one, like I'm painting delicate flowers on a canvas. I close my eyes. He moves. Bree gasps. My eyes snap open. A grinning Auguste covered in bay powder sits inches from my face. The heat of his skin warms mine. I smell the strawberries he ate before the appointment. The softness of his breath lands on my cheek. I can almost taste him. He kisses my cheek and says,
"For luck, I trust you won't tell anyone."
Then he disappears out the door. 31. After my morning appointments, Remy walks Ivy and me to the Queen's sitting room for a private meeting. Ivy fusses about Auguste the entire walk, but her words can't erase the dangerous feeling of his mouth against my cheek, even though they should. The thought of him almost distracts me from the fact that I'm about to have my first semi-private audience with the Queen. The large doors open for us. The red damask walls of the Queen's tea salon display her royal emblem. a six-pointed crown with a glittering ruby and chrysanthemum in the centre. Chafing dishes melt medicinal pastilles, and steam vases release vapour into the room. A fireplace hisses and crackles. Remy posts himself near the door with the other guards.
"Your Majesty, Lady Camellia, the favourite, here to see you as requested," the attendant says.
The Queen stares out an arched window. Wrinkles mar her rich brown forehead.
"Sit with me, Camellia."
Her voice is soft and reminds me of my mother's. I ease into the chair beside her. A teacup and saucer find their way into my nervous hands. I take small sips, wondering why she wants to see me.
"I'm very impressed with the strength of your arcana," she finally looks up.
"Thank you, Your Majesty," I say.
"You do things with them that I've never seen before," she says. "I wasn't sure about you. I think you know that."
She pats my hand.
"I thought you'd be as reckless as my daughter."
I gulp.
"But I think you will be the one to help me. After all this time, you might just be strong enough."
She rises.
"Come with me. You too, Ivy."
I stand, then stare back at Ivy. She shoos me forward and follows behind. We navigate a series of hallways in silence. We pass an indoor garden, a marble bathing onsen, and a series of offices, until we stop before a white door marked with a white rose snaking through a four-pointed crown. The servants stand aside, and the Queen herself pushes this door open. I have no idea what to expect. Cerulean light escapes the healing lanterns drifting through the chamber. The walls are papered with thick lines of black and cream. A fire roars in the hearth, warm and bright and comforting, splashing coppery beams across a large, gauze-draped bed. The wood crackles as it burns, providing the only sound in the room. A beautiful dark-haired woman stands beside the bed, her light brown hands knitting a scarf. The Queen smiles at her.
"How is she?"
"The same," the woman replies, walking over to kiss the Queen on the mouth.
"Camellia, this is Lady Zuri Pelletier."
I bow. Her lover. Servants and nurses curtsy to the Queen as they scurry around as quietly as mice.
"May I introduce to you my firstborn, Princess Charlotte," the Queen says, "heir to the Kingdom of Orléans."
She goes to the bedside and lifts the whisper-thin curtain. I step lightly forward, peering in. The sleeping young woman is propped up on silk pillows stuffed with feathers. A quilted blanket laced with thick gold ribbons lies over her. She looks like a perfect blend of the king and the queen. Her ponytail is a long rope at her side, with tiny frizzy curls that blend the colour of the king's currant red and the queen's midnight black coils. A jewel-encrusted hair comb winks in the light. Her skin is a warm bronze dotted with freckles. The Queen rubs her daughter's hand and hums a song. Newsies have speculated about Princess Charlotte's condition. Some reports say she was born frail and unable to fend off disease. Others say she suffered from a broken heart after her childhood sweetheart and betrothed died in a freak accident. I have never known what to believe, but one thing is clear. The Queen loves Charlotte with all her being.
"Isn't she beautiful?"
The Queen sweeps a loose curl from Charlotte's forehead. Weary creases ring the Queen's eyes, and sadness slopes her shoulders forward over the sleeping princess. She looks up, and our eyes meet. I'm seeing Her Majesty for the first time. I glance away, feeling like I've discovered something hidden, something not meant for me to see. "Yes, she is," I say.
"She's been asleep for 4 years."
She kisses her daughter's cheek.
"And I make sure she never fades to grey."
She waves me forward.
"Come closer."
I ease into my question. May I ask what happened to her?
You may, but I have no answer for you.
She strokes Princess Charlotte's cheek.
And that's why I've brought you here. I need you to make her well. The royal physicians haven't been able to awaken her. Even my bell, Arabella, has been unsuccessful.
I don't have the power to heal. I bite the inside of my cheek.
But you must be able to do something. I need her awake, even if she's no longer beautiful. It's too early for her sunset. You must find a way to help me, to help your people.
Your Majesty, I don't understand. How does healing Charlotte help my people? The Queen grasps my hands. Her own are cold and clammy.
The Declaration of Heirs ceremony is coming in 8 days' time. I will have to tell the kingdom that I'm sick and designate who the crown will pass to. Sophia cannot become queen. She must never have the throne.
Her words send a tremor through the room. I remember Sophia in her workshop, her eyes wild and frantic.
Sophia isn't fit. She's the way she is because I didn't give her enough of myself. I didn't have enough to give her after Charlotte became ill. And if I'm honest, she's too much like me. Full of the temper I had in my youth. The one that had to be leached out of me by bells every month.
She coughs. Attendants rush forward, bringing her medicinal chafing dish closer. Her coughing subsides.
I tried to do the same with Sophia, but it didn't work.
She sips hot tea.
I pray to the God of Life every day that Charlotte wakes up before I die, so she can take her rightful place as queen, to be at my side when I announce my illness.
I can't imagine the Queen and Sophia being anything alike.
I must tell my people. The newsies are starting to speculate. They've been ruthless with me as of late. The sicker I get, the more grey seeps to the surface, it seems. The more I return to my natural form.
She takes a deep breath.
Orléans will not survive having Sophia as its queen. I need you to wake Charlotte. Use the Arcana in any way you can to heal her. Experiment. Do trials. Something. Anything. It would be a sacrifice, I know. But you would save us.
I open my mouth several times. The words stick at the back of my throat. Your Majesty, Ivy says, stepping closer. Camellia will die if she attempts this. The Arcana aren't... The Queen puts her hand in the air. Ivy swallows the rest of her sentence.
I need you to consider doing this for me. I'll need an answer and a plan in 8 days' time. By the Declaration of Heirs ceremony, Charlotte must be awake. We must try.
My heart leaps with each beat, but...
The kingdom needs you. I need you.
She leaves me at Princess Charlotte's bedside.
Ivy, come with me.
They leave me alone with the servants and nurses and their charge. I'm a mess of worries and questions. Princess Charlotte's soft breaths hum. Her chest lifts and falls. I touch her cheek. She doesn't react. Her skin is warm to the touch.
What happened to you? I ask her.
What if I can't help you?
I watch her lying there. I wonder what Maman would do. Risk her arcana to help her country and queen? Or refuse?
What if I fail?
How terrible of a queen would Sophia be? Why doesn't the queen trust her own daughter? I crave the way the queen looked at me. Her eyes full of admiration and confidence. I want to be able to meet every challenge she gives me. I slip the chained mirror from around my neck, then take a pin from my bell bun and stick my finger. The seed of blood climbs through the mirror's ridges. The roses twist and reveal their message. Blood for truth. I place the mirror before Charlotte and wait for the fog to reveal her true reflection. "What are you doing?" a voice says. I scramble to shove the necklace down the front of my dress.